It's been 25 years since the movie Scream was released and became an instant hit with critics and audiences around the world. Wes Craven and Kevin Williamson's knowing slasher spawned three sequels and set a young, hip and scary trend that immediately changed the landscape of cinema. Now with a new installment of the record-breaking saga on the way in 2022, this podcast will celebrate the original release and what came next, maybe with a few twists and turns along the way. I'm Alex James and this is the Woodsboro Podcast. In this episode of the Woodsboro Podcast, serious Scream royalty, serious Woodsboro stories. Marianne Maddalena was by Wes Craven's side through the whole journey, producing Scream, Scream 2, Scream 3, and Scream 4, and she's also acting as exec producer on the brand new vision for Scream in 2022. I met up with Marianne in London, and the second she sat down, the stories started to flow. So many amazing stories, in fact, that this is going to be a very special two-part podcast. Marianne is not only an integral player in the story of the Scream saga, but many of Wes Craven's other movies too. And one thing's for sure, Marianne always knew she wanted to be a film producer. She grew up in Michigan and moved to France when she was 18.
I went to Cannes. And I became an au pair, and because I'd heard of the Cannes Film Festival. That's the only reason I went there. And so I got there, and I was an au pair, and then I started meeting people who worked on yachts, and there were jobs on yachts. So then I got a job as a stewardess on Harold Robbins' yacht. And Harold Robbins was one of the biggest pulp fiction writers, so sensational novels. And he was the best-selling author of the world.
Harold also had a film company, and so
he gave me a job in L.A. with his film company. So I moved to Cannes when I was 18, and I left at 21 with a job in L.A. So I moved to L.A., and I started working for the company Harold Robbins International. And then eventually I got a job as this guy, Mort Viner's assistant. And he represented Dean Martin, Gene Kelly, and Shirley MacLaine. And the agency represented Michael Jackson, Alfred Hitchcock, David Niven. They all came through the doors. So that was fun. And again, I just told everybody I want to be a film producer. I want to be a film producer. So then I somehow became friends with Dean Martin's girlfriend. And she was on a TV show called Vegas, which was set in Vegas. So I became her stand-in in Vegas. So I moved to Vegas for three seasons. And that was amazing because back in those days, we had guest stars like Ava Gardner and Sammy Davis Jr. and Zsa Zsa Gabor were guest stars on Vegas because it was an Aaron Spelling show.
Yeah.
And he was very much into old Hollywood. You know, he did Dynasty and Dallas. So we had all kinds of crazy guest actors. So I got to learn, and then I moved to I went back to L.A., and I got a job as a stand-in on a show called Knott's Landing. And then I quit, and I got a couple jobs as production coordinators. And then somehow someone told me Wes was looking for an assistant on his first studio movie called Deadly Friend. So I got the interview and went in, and the funny story is that he had been to a wine luncheon, so he was a little drunk. And we just hit it off, and I got the job, and I did Deadly Friend, and of course I said to Wes, I want to be a film producer. So he just was really supportive, and he took me to everything, casting meetings, sessions, which no one brought their assistant because it was sort of sacred, you know. And I remember Marion Doherty, who is the head of casting at Warner Brothers, was horrified that I was in a casting session because they're very sensitive, you know, with the actors, you know, reading. But anyway, he brought me everywhere, and I went everywhere. And then I did Serpent in the Rainbow as his assistant. And then I don't know how we got a deal with Universal to do Shocker and People Under the Stairs. And he said, here you go. It's your movie, Shocker. So he gave it to me, gave me the first opportunity. And so we did Shocker, and then I think we worked together for 20, 25 years after that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this plays very much into the people I've spoken to who say how generous he was and, you know, very nurturing in terms of the talent and very calm on set.
Very calm. No, we had a mantra that we just we loved working, and we were at work so much, we didn't want to work with assholes.
Mm-hmm.
So if we...
A good mantra for any job.
Exactly. But that doesn't happen in Hollywood. So we just had a great time, and we hired really great people, and we kept, the, you know, in many cases, we kept the family together. and worked together for years. So he was. I mean, he was very shy. So he kind of needed me. I was more of a spokesperson for him because he actually had a lot of anxiety and he was very shy going into a meeting. Mm-hmm. You know, he's great on the set, but just out in the world socially or in a meeting with executives, he was actually very nervous. So when you have a team, you know, you already have a partner. So we kind of complemented each other. I mean, obviously I was the luckier one.
So it seems that with New Nightmare, he was trying to take back control of the character and the franchise at that point.
Yes.
And then Vampire in Brooklyn sounds like hell on earth from what I've read and some of the stories.
Not as bad as Cursed.
Yeah, well, I'll come to that. Definitely, I'll come to that.
I mean, Vampire in Brooklyn was just what I think Eddie in the beginning had said that he wanted to be funny, and then he took the unfunny role. So it was just a strange movie. You know, it was a strange studio movie with Eddie Murphy not wanting to be funny. So that already, you know, was not a good, you know, move. And there lots happened on that movie. Yeah, it wasn't the most pleasant experience. Yeah.
Did it, when you all came off Vampire in Brooklyn, did it feel like a, what do we do now?
Well, at that point, Wes actually did not want to do horror mm-hmm. anymore. So we were just looking for different things. And then Scream landed. And that was incredible. And there's so many great stories even before we got involved that my friend who you should talk to, Richard Potter, who was Bob Weinstein's assistant, or maybe he was an executive at that point. He has a wonderful story about how he came in and said to Bob, I've read the best spec script I've ever read. And Bob, I think he read it too. And he goes, oh my God, you're right. But Kevin's agents had sent it to various people. So there was a bidding war. But Richard was present when Bob was like, I'll give you $1 million right now today. Take it off the table. So that all went on without us. And then we got it. And we had no idea until even the weekend it came out, we didn't know that it was a hit. Because there's a famous story. We opened in December,
yeah.
Which Variety called us dead on arrival, opposite Beavis and Butthead and One Fine Day. So we went, I think it was the Friday night before Christmas, went to Universal, and we attended a screening. We went to the theater, so opening night. We went into our little, theater there, because there's like 15, and nobody was laughing. There's no sound. And then we went over to Beavis and Butthead, and it was insane, and people were laughing and throwing things at the screen. So we went home. We thought, didn't work, you know. And I think Wes went off to Hawaii, and I went up to Monterey for Christmas with our families. And then we got a phone call from Bob congratulating us on a Saturday. We're like, well, what do you mean? I mean, it only made $6 million in the opening weekend. And our previous movies had sort of made $6 million and just died, kind of made 20 total. And then every weekend it just kept getting more, like 9 million, another 9 million, 10 million. So we had no idea until probably the third weekend in that it was such a big hit.
How do you remember that period production aside from release?
And so we had Drew Barrymore as Sydney. And I think that's why we took it. Because don't forget, at that point, Wes did not want to do horror, so he needed some enticing. So about a month in or so, or maybe even 3 weeks, Bob called Wes and said, sorry to tell you this. Drew doesn't think Sydney is right for her, but she's willing to play Casey. And, of course, at that point, no one had ever put such a big star into just an opening. And it was brilliant. It was just brilliant. So we were a little disappointed, but, you still have Drew Barrymore. So then we went ahead and did huge casting sessions for Sydney. Huge. We saw, a lot of different people and just screen tested them. But Nev just seemed perfect for it. Then Bob, we just had all kinds of choices for all the other roles. But obviously Courtney was brilliant. David Arquette was just a marvel. It was really hard to find Matthew Lillard. Like, that was a really tricky role. And how perfect was he? And really, Jamie Kennedy wasn't famous either. And I think we read somebody famous for that, Ashton Kutcher. But he just wasn't right. You know, he wasn't right for it. So, you know, Bob just threw in Henry Winkler. That was Bob. So we went up to Santa Rosa. We were all at this Doubletree Motel on the outside of town. So we were very self-contained. And it was so much fun. I mean, all the actors were young, and there were a lot of them, and they were all having fun. And me and Wes and some of the other producers would go having these incredible dinners. We actually one night went to French Laundry, which is a restaurant in Healdsburg. And I remember we went to this dinner, and it was kind of far from Santa Rosa. It was about an hour, and we got stopped by the cops on the way home. But we didn't get a ticket. But anyway, we had so much fun. Like, Wes and I would just party. Like, we just spent the studio's money. So, like, on location scouts, it was all about where we're going to have lunch. And we're going to drink wine. And we had parties on them. And we just made it so much fun. We had parties all the time. We just spent their money. We did. And once we had a birthday for Wes, I think it was his 70th. I can't believe we had a party for, it cost $20,000. And we got in a little trouble, but not really. I mean, we just spent their money. Because Wes and I loved it. We loved just, you know, going out to dinner, having all the crew to dinner. And I was really good at arranging things. That was kind of my thing. I could, you know, go to Australia for the weekend with him on a publicity tour, but then we'd find the best. I think we found out Bruce Springsteen was in Melbourne, so we went to there and saw that. So, you know, we just made it fun.
And that's part of your friendship, isn't it?
Yeah.
You've got to, like you say,
yeah,
have fun with the people you're working
with. Yes, yes.
Did you know at that point that there would be, I mean, if one's a success, two's inevitable?
No, not at all. What happened with two? Oh, yeah, it was interesting. I think we got the job, and then something happened. There was a big fight between Bob and Wes. Maybe it was about money. And Wes quit. And Bob hired Robert Rodriguez, who, funny enough, had the same agent as Wes, Robert Newman. And Wes was so mad, and he called Rodriguez and said, "Hey, you know, I had this gig, and Bob and I had a fight." And he's like, "Man, I'm not taking anyone's job." And he called Bob up and said, "I'm not doing this." I don't remember what the fight was, but then we got it together. But on the first one, we had a big fight. On Scream 1, well, we had a few fights. So first, we had a fight about shooting up in Sonoma. So in L.A. is just, it's not a small town. There's not really a small town, and it was really perfect for Northern California. Mm-hmm. But it cost $1 million more to go on location. And Bob said no. And I was in the room at Tribeca when Wes just got up and walked out. And I had to follow him. I thought, oh, my God, we've lost this movie. And we were downstairs in the Tribeca Bar and Grill. And Cary Grant, Bob's exec, came down and said, "You got your million." So that was number one hurdle. Then the famous story, you know, we were having the hardest time finding the mask. And we had K&B designing a mask, and nothing they came up with was working. Really, it was just, it kind of, the mask looked like gargoyles. It just was the wrong deal. And the famous story, you know, we were on Location Scout, and it was this lady's house. She was older, and I think her kids were long gone. But we were up, I was upstairs in one of the son's bedrooms. Obviously, the son didn't live there, and I saw the mask. I'm like, oh, my God, this is it. This is the mask. And I ran down so excited. "You guys, I found the mask." And he and Bruce, Wes and Bruce Miller, the production designer, just looked at me like, "No, no, we're creating our own mask. We hate that mask." I was like, "Are you kidding me? We haven't seen nothing close to this mask. No, we hate it. We hate it. We're doing our own thing. We hate that mask." So I was like, all right. And then a couple of weeks later, when we literally couldn't find a mask, we didn't like anything K&B was doing, and I said to Bruce, because he, of course, was the production designer, so, you know, he was in his department, communicated with the people on the scouts, "Call that lady and get that mask. You know, I hope she didn't throw it away." And so he did. I think the location guy went over and got it. And then Wes said, "I like it, but I need to make it my own. So I'm going to make the chin different." I'm like, all right. So we made our own mask. We also dealt with all the, you know, franchising or the paying for the rights, but he had to change it. And we filmed a couple scenes with it, and it just wasn't right. So we went back to the old mask. But there are a couple scenes with the altered mask in it. It was a Henry Winkler scene. Oh, and then, no, this was the fight. That's not even the fight. Then the fight was Bob was watching dailies, which was all Drew Barrymore, and he hated them. And he called Wes up and said, the dailies are workmanlike at the best. You should see this movie. This guy, Uli Bornadel, is directing for us. I forgot the name of it. I think he was Swedish. That's really a master. So can you imagine telling that to a director? Of course, then Wes told everyone that. Drew, I'm like, Wes, don't tell the talent. And we were so sad. And then he hated the mask. So I was so proud of myself because I'd found the mask. And then Bob hated it. I'm like, oh, my God. And he literally said on the phone, I don't care what you do. You go and you go to a shop and you buy 10 masks. And tomorrow you shoot that scene with Henry Winkler 10 different ways. Now, that would be stupid because we don't have the license. So we said, you know what? You don't like our dailies. Shut us down. And we had a big, you know, it was late at night. And they'd flown Cary Grant in, the same guy from before, the exec. And what he got from us was an agreement to show him the cut footage of the opening scene with Drew. Because normally you never show the studio for 10 weeks after you wrap. A director doesn't have to. But what Bob got was a sequence. And he could see it worked. And he had something that he could take to MIFED to sell. So, and he loved it. Obviously, it was brilliant. And we had this incredible editor in Patrick Lussier who cut to camera, sound effects, everything. The next day, you would literally have a scene or whatever you shot the day before cut together with sound effects and music. And Bob said, what do I know about dailies? So here he almost caused, you know, all the stress, and Wes was freaked out, and the actors were freaked out, and that was the second big fight with Bob, yeah.
More fights?
I think no, because I think everything went very smoothly because the test screening was so good. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there were any more fights until the Scream 2, when he hired Robert Rodriguez. And then I think Scream 4 was just completely fighting. Like, it was because Bob was hiring all kinds of people behind each other's backs to write the script. I think Wes wrote one, Kevin wrote one, and Aaron Kruger wrote one. There's somebody else, and he didn't tell anyone else that anyone else was writing the scripts. I'm sure there were more fights, but that's all I can remember right now.
So did 2 feel, because 2 was quite quick on the back of 1, wasn't
yeah.
it? About like a year apart, perhaps?
Yeah.
So did the pressure feel more because it had been so successful and you were turning it around so quickly?
Yes, but we just had fun and we had great actors and we, you know, again, Bob did really well with like Rebecca Gayhart and Portia de Rossi and Sarah Michelle Gellar, and he spent the money, you know, he spent the money. It was really hard to schedule, you know, because Sarah Michelle Gellar had 3 days but we had such an incredible cast we had fun. We had fun, even if they were terrible.
Yeah,
we had fun.
Skipping back to 3, so there was a tiny gap between, well, a small gap between 1 and 2, a bit of a bigger gap between 2 and 3. Was Music of the Heart in there?
Music of the Heart.
Okay. This is obviously a passion project for him that he'd wanted to do for a long time, and part of his deal, perhaps.
Well, it was actually a negotiation. It was Bob's and Harvey said, if you do 3, you could do anything from our slate.
Okay.
So we, you know, had things to choose from. But it's really hard because as much as Wes wanted to do something else, I couldn't get him to read anything or watch anything. Or he was reluctant. So I don't even... So I think finally he liked Music of the Heart. Finally, by the time we could get him to look at something, he was just reluctant. I don't know why. It was a fear of stepping out of the genre. Even though he wanted to, it was his fear of feeling, can I do it? So it took a long time just to get him to read a script or to focus. But finally, we agreed on Music of the Heart. And it was fun. So he was really good at that. And it was pretty amazing to shoot at Carnegie Hall. And we opened at the White House and hung out with Clinton and had tours. We had a tour one night till 2 a.m. of the Oval Office and all the rooms in the White House. Then we did a documentary in the White House because of that experience. And... It was really funny. So we were getting this tour at 2 a.m. I'm like, I can't believe I'm here. I want to remember everything in my eyeballs. And the funny thing was, it was the day we premiered, something was going on, VH1 Music for Children kind of concert had gone on. And we showed our movie and we met all kinds of people, like Ted Kennedy was there and all these. It was an incredible day. But then we screened our movie for the president and his wife. And Clinton, of course, slept through the whole thing. Like, we all had really uncomfortable chairs. They had, like, Barca loungers with blankets. And they slept through the whole thing. Well, at least Clinton did. Can't blame the guy. But it was fun. And so then Scream 3 happened, which was so much fun. Incredible casting again. Parker Posey and Emily Mortimer, who I love her so much. And I can't think of what wasn't easy about it. No, it was easy, yeah.
And Nev, for a shorter period of time than...
Well, Nev kind of messed up because she was a big star. And she didn't want to do the whole thing. So I think she gave us, I'm trying to remember, 20 days for the price. Which meant if you went a day over, you had to divide that $2 million up. And it was her daily rate, right?
Yeah.
So maybe she thought we were going to write everything in there and she would be the biggest storyline. But we had to rewrite and make it less of her.
Had you in your head put it to bed? Was that it at the end of number 3? Or?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Yeah, it's probably where it should have stayed until now. No, Scream 4 was just a mess. You know, it was just the most toxic of Bob and how he dealt with people. Like, literally, like I'm telling you, he did not tell anyone else that Kevin was writing. Bob was, or Kevin, Wes, and Aaron, I think. And we'll have to look at the credits. There was somebody else. How toxic is that? Mm-hmm. So Wes went away and wrote a script, you know, for 130 pages, which they should be 90 pages. So he really worked hard. And then Kevin and Wes spoke. They're like, are you kidding? This is what Bob did to us? You know, because already there was tension between those two. So that was so toxic. And I think it shows. You know, I think it's good, but I don't think it's great at all. It was a mess. It gives me a headache thinking about all that secrecy, you know.
And the filming process as fun as the rest? You know, everybody back together?
No, it really wasn't fun. No.
Changed.
Yeah, it was just different because that was so toxic to begin with, you know. And again, it's the wrong way, you know, to do. It's a completely different way to do a movie than what got you the success in the first place.
Yeah, of course. Do you feel that Wes continuing to be director across the whole franchise was to avoid the burn of what happened with Nightmare and Freddy?
I think the burn of Nightmare was that he signed all his rights away. He was silly. Most people, you know, I don't know who his agent was at that point, but they option their script and they control the rights of the script. But, you know, he was young, he was broke. So Bob Shea just bought the whole thing. And so then Wes didn't make money off the merchandising or even the sequels. I think retroactively when he did Nightmare 7, he got some money. But he sold it like that, you know, but he was very bitter about it. Mm-hmm. Scream was different because really Wes was just a director for hire. He didn't write the script of Scream, right? So it was just a different deal. But, you know, Bob Shea, that was what happened in those days. He bought it and then Wes gave it up and then realized later what he'd done. Of course, nobody knows a movie's going to be a hit because Nightmare on Elm Street was passed on by many studios. Wes always had a letter framed from someone at Universal. And I said, we just don't think, you know, a movie where scary things happen in dreams will be scary. So people were passing on it. So the point he got to New Line, what's a writer going to do, you know? But then he regretted it.
The best part of spending this time with Marianne is seeing how one story triggers another that then leads to another. And then up comes another. And they just keep coming. I love it so much. And there's plenty more to come in the next episode when, among many other things, our attention will also turn to the story of when Wes Craven and Kevin Williamson were reunited for a film called Cursed.
That's where you say to yourself, what illness can I invent to not have to show up for the rest of this movie? That was like drudgery in hell because it went on for so long. because, you know, it was supposed to be, you know, a total of a year of your life, but we shot it like three times. So it was 2 years for the same money, you know, and it was awful.
That and lots more besides in the next episode of the Woodsboro Podcast. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Woodsboro Podcast. Please rate and subscribe so you don't miss future episodes. And if you'd like to join the conversation, then you can find more on social media at the Woodsboro Pod. And you can find me on social media too at This Is Alex James.